Bong.
Smelly lorry drivers turn off for cruise passengers.
Bong.
Live crab vending machines launched.
Bong.
Man arrested with $1,540 tied to scrotum.
Bong.
Britain's oldest fridge still going strong.
Bong.
Elusive pigzilla shacks up with horses.
Bong.
Man impersonated Tiger Woods for sex tape.
Bong.
Fake police officer pulls over real police officer.
Bong.
Man showers to sober up in wrong house.
Bong.
Female snails grow penises on heads.
Bong.
Librarian collects 26 years of belly button fluff.
Bong.
Nuns to host annual surfing contest.
Bong.
Naked cowboy plans to run for presidency.
Bong.
Duchess mauled by kitten.
Bong.
Couple demand that 1,000-year-old church bells are silenced at night after iPhone app suggests noises ruining their sleep.
Bong.
Man eats crack pipe, gets caught anyway.
Bong.
Ann Widdecombe dances like a bull.
Bong.
Man has the widest mouth in the world.
Bong.
Most tattooed man injects ink into eyes.
Bong.
Prankster tattoos 16-inch penis on friend's back.
Bong.
Mauled trainer to wed with tiger as best man.
Bong.
7 inches is enough, Rim tells Jobs.
Bong.
That's Wong's Bongs for this week.
Excellent. So hello, I'm Sam.
Hi, I'm Tom. How's it going?
Good, this is Paper Cuts. That feature originally started out as it's the story in a headline. It's you know, it's a story that is totally summed up by the headline, and you don't need to know any more. But a lot of those definitely demand further explanation.
I think. I may not have that further information. What information? Which ones are you looking for further information?
There was a lot.
Okay. Well, the 7 inches is enough. Rim tells Jobs is a great headline. It's sort of, this one does require a bit more explanation. Canada's Research in Motion has fired back at Apple's Steve Jobs over his claim that the iPhone is outselling the BlackBerry and that 7-inch tablet computers have no future. So they took that and then used the headline, 7 inches is enough, Rim tells Jobs, which is touted as the headline of the week across many news aggregators and Twitter fans across the globe.
Would you agree with that proposition?
It's certainly a ballsy headline to go for, we could say.
It's a ballsy headline.
Whoever got the sub-editor that got that through deserves a high five. I mean, it's pretty unlikely that he didn't know what he was doing there, cramming all of those phrases into one sentence. But, well done. We salute you.
That was good work.
Any other ones there?
I mean, elusive pigzilla shacks up with horses. What the hell is that about?
It's a massive pig that's sort of living with some horses. I think that's basically the whole story.
Okay, maybe you're right.
Britain's oldest fridge still going strong. You consider? I mean, it's just a fridge that's still going.
Good. What outlet was that? Was that in? Was that in all the broadsheets?
All the big papers had that one. I think I first saw that on Ananova actually. Just give credit for these. A lot of these recently I've discovered news.com.au or /au Australian news. They're kind of like the Fox News offshoot of Australian news, and they've got some brilliant stuff. They're really covering the news that other people are afraid to talk about. Such as the guy tattooing the penis on his friend's back. I mean, yeah.
And the librarian who's collected 26 years of belly button fluff. There are definite questions to ask there. How much has she collected?
Why do you wish it was a she?
Librarians tend to be women more than men.
I don't know. I mean, I'd like to see your stats on that one, sir. But either way, I think it's a man actually.
Okay.
It's a performance art project, and I think they're knitting a jumper out of it or something like that.
No.
I'm pretty sure that's what's going on. So you're not going to. There must be quite a lot. I mean, do you get belly button fluff?
I mean, how much? I get belly button fluff.
Like, if you every day, you could pick out a bit if you remembered.
Probably not every day. It depends what I'm wearing. So some items produce more fluff than others.
Okay, that's a good point. Yeah, I collect quite a lot.
What do you do with it? Have you knitted anything with it? Or?
Well, no. I mean, that's 26 years. I'm still 25, so.
So not one next year you'll have enough to make a jumper.
Well, exactly. I don't want to just jump the gun. I mean, weirdly enough, I didn't collect it. Initially when I started out in my sort of naught year.
Yeah.
I sort of my belly button was very long and attached to my mother, so I couldn't collect any then.
Right,
they chopped it off and tied it, but
those cords don't get too fluffy.
No. So I mean, I would have to start from now and wait until I'm sort of 51. But maybe I'll do that. It's good. We want to inspire people. That's the point of Paper Cuts. Mm. Actually, the first point of Paper Cuts was. My initial ambition was that we would mean that no one would ever have to read the Metro ever again. I think that still stands.
That does still stand.
So,
how far do you think we've achieved that goal?
Well, I mean, we've seen off London Light and the London Paper.
That's a very good point. Yeah.
I don't see why we can't get rid of the Metro as well.
The Independent are launching a new newspaper, aren't they?
That's true.
It's going to be like a slim newspaper.
It's 20p small newspaper. Apparently, people can't be bothered to read big news stories. So, I mean, I think it's probably a good idea, actually.
Yeah.
You just can't read a whole paper. Who has time to read like an entire paper?
We're also reaching out into that whole illiterate market that really isn't being serviced well by newspapers these days.
Exactly. I mean, some people aren't going to know about the Pigzilla. Just they can't read doesn't mean they shouldn't be given the info.
Definitely.
I mean,
we're providing a valuable public service. We ought to be getting some kind of government funding.
I completely agree. That's what you said. Big society news around paper cuts. Mm. So what's been going on this week? I mean, what have you got?
Well, I was most shocked by the news this week, the very sad news of the passing of Paul the Psychic Octopus, well known for his exploits in the 2010 World Cup. So,
It was this year, yeah.
It was this year, the World Cup.
You've probably buried the memories of that awful tournament, but it was, in fact, this year, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Paul was one of the most abiding memories of the whole thing, really.
That's true.
Especially for England fans.
Yeah, definitely. Paul the Octopus was, probably one of the nation's biggest heroes because we claimed him. He's one of ours, isn't he?
He's one of ours.
Because he's in a German zoo, mm-hmm. Or aquarium,
Sea Life Centre.
Water Zoo, Sea Life Centre. So he was. Everyone originally thought he was German, so we couldn't like the octopus. And then, because it was a good news story, I think the tabloids bandied together to look into his past and found that he was, in fact, came from a Bournemouth zoo or something like that. So
from Weymouth, actually.
Weymouth.
From Weymouth in Dorset.
Okay, from Weybeetha. Right, that's good.
Good.
He died. I mean, should we be suspicious?
We should perhaps be suspicious. Have you seen the body? I haven't seen any pictures of the body.
I've not been watching his CCTV either. Have people gone through the footage?
I haven't seen any. There is the potential that it's a conspiracy. But on the assumption that he's dead, I've gone and prepared an audio obituary for Paul.
Okay, that's beautiful. Please go ahead. Pull yourself together. You look like you're about to cry, but just try and, for the listeners, come on, stay professional.
Paul the Octopus was hatched in January 2008 in Weymouth, Dorset. He was named after a character from a German poem called Der Tintenfisch, Paul Octopus, by the children's writer Boy Lawson. He was an orphan and his childhood was unsettled. He was taken to Oberhausen in Germany at a very young age and forced to work long hours entertaining visitors at the Sea Life Centre there. According to some reports, his talent for predicting football results first emerged during the European Championships in 2008. According to other reports, that was a different octopus. But up until then, he hadn't been very interested in football, preferring instead to read poetry and practice the piano. But the excitement of Euro 2008 took hold of him, and he took to predicting the outcomes of matches by choosing from two boxes adorned with the flags of competing nations, each containing his favourite food, mussels. At Euro 2008, Paul went for Germany every time, possibly because the handlers always served the mussels in the Germany box with a white wine and garlic sauce, which was Paul's favourite. He was right on 4 out of 6 occasions, better than chance but not good enough to grab the worldwide acclaim he so desperately craved. His failure to foresee Germany's defeat to Spain in the final particularly haunted him. Visitors to Sea Life Centre saw him squirting ink in fits of rage. Paul's emotions were never far below the surface. They said he always wore all three of his hearts on all 8 of his sleeves. Paul was determined to do better at the next major international tournament, and he dedicated his time to watching as many matches as he could. When the 2020 World Cup in South Africa came around, his efforts paid off. He correctly predicted the results of all of Germany's group games, including the shock defeat to Serbia, and their second-round win against his home country, England. His prediction for the quarter-final that Germany would lose to Argentina prompted Argentine chef Nicola Badoru to post an octopus recipe on Facebook.
Ouch.
Paul's keeper, Oliver Valenciak, responded by saying, "There are always people who want to eat our octopus, but he is not shy, and we are here to protect him as well. He will survive." Paul was proved right, but his prediction that Germany would lose to Spain in the semi-final angered the nation where he lived and led to further death threats. The newspaper Westfälische Rundschau accused him of betrayal. Fans called for him to be cooked and eaten. In response, Spanish Prime Minister José Luis Rodríguez Zapatero said he would send a team of bodyguards to protect Paul. The Environment Minister Elena Espinosa said she would give Paul a safe haven under Spanish conservation laws. Paul was proved right, and Spain beat Germany. And in the final, Spain went on to beat Holland, as Paul again correctly predicted. He maintained his 100% accurate record during the tournament, beating many rival soothsaying animals that didn't do quite so well. The animals at Chemnitz Zoo in Germany, they were wrong on all of Germany's group stage games. Leon the porcupine picked Australia to win against Germany. Petty the pygmy hippopotamus thought that that Germany would beat Serbia. And both the Jimmy the Peruvian guinea pig and Anton the tamarin both thought that Ghana were going to beat Germany. Manny the parakeet from Singapore, Pauline the octopus from Holland, and Xiao Ge the octopus from Qingdao, China, Pino the chimpanzee, and African red river hog Apfelsin in Tallinn Zoo in Macedonia all thought that Holland would win the final. And Crocodile Harry of Australia thought Spain would win. But no, Paul beat all of them. But after the tournament, he retired. He said he wanted to go back to his original job of entertaining children and making them laugh. He rejected lucrative offers of employment from bookmakers, investment bankers, and insurance companies. But it wasn't all happy. He was attacked on various fronts. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad criticised Paul in a speech on 24th of July, saying that the West used the octopus to spread Western propaganda and superstition. This really hurt Paul because he had always been a great admirer of Mr. Ahmadinejad's politics. Still, there were better things to come. On the 20th of August, he was given the position of an official ambassador to England's 2018 World Cup bid. He said that taking the role helped him to put aside his guilt about predicting against his homeland during the World Cup. And the bid team denied that he had been recruited because having eight tentacles makes it easier to give backhanders to FIFA officials without being noticed. Tragically, Paul died just yesterday. It was very, very saddening news.
I heard a rumour that Mark Van Bommel did a kung fu kick and took him out. Is this true? Do you think there's any, have you got any?
We haven't seen any evidence of that.
I certainly haven't seen that he's not done that. So
no. Well,
it's a double team. Nigel de Jong and Mark Van Bommel took the octopus out. You know, they sort of slid in.
It sounds possible, but according to Stefan Porvall, the manager of the Oberhausen Sea Life Centre, he appeared to have died peacefully of natural causes during the night. He said, "We're consoled by the knowledge that he enjoyed a good life here, and the care provided for him by our dedicated displays team could not have been bettered." Staff said that his death was not entirely unexpected because common octopuses generally live only a couple of years. They plan to bury him in their grounds and erect a modest permanent shrine.
Wow, that's pretty thorough obituary there. But he clearly deserves it. I mean,
definitely.
I'd never heard of any of those other psychic animals before.
Manny the parakeet achieved some notoriety, but she got it wrong in the final.
Well, that's no good, is it? So we can be happy about this. Apparently, Paul will live on in the form of a range of commercial enterprises, ranging from special clothing lines to mobile phone applications. And he will feature in a documentary to be released early next year. I mean, I imagine you're probably the one.
I'm going to be first in line to queue for that. The iPhone app, is that what's presumably to predict football results?
I would imagine so.
Hmm. The Guardian ran a poll. How would you eat a dead psychic octopus? Cut in rings, rolled in seasoned flour and quickly fried on a griddle, or hacked to pieces and simmered slowly in a nice tomato and white wine sauce? What do you reckon, Tom?
I would definitely go for the cover it in breadcrumbs, put a little bit of chilli and some salt on there, deep fry that bad boy and, get on and eat it, I would say.
That sounds good. I'd go with frying as well. When I voted yesterday, 83% of people had gone for frying.
Good work, guys. Yeah, I mean, you've got to fry squid, haven't you? It's got to be done. Brilliant. Well, that's, nice. I've got some more animal stuff here. Sniffer dogs for hire to anxious parents. Worried parents can now hire out drug sniffer dogs to search their children's bedrooms in a new service launched in the US. Organisers of the Dogs Finding Drugs project say their highly trained dogs can detect even the tiniest whiff of drugs within seconds. They're $200 an hour, though, these dogs, and they can detect marijuana, heroin, cocaine and methamphetamines, as well as prescription drugs. So there you go. You know, that's quite a good development, I think.
Yep. Can you train any old dog to do that? That's quite expensive. If you've got a dog already, can you train it to sniff out drugs?
I don't know exactly. I mean, I've never tried with any of my pets.
Mm.
It's pretty dangerous for dogs to be sort of happening across drugs. I mean, you could imagine some terror stories there.
Terrier stories. Do sniffer dogs ever get addicted to drugs?
I would imagine they do. It's pretty hard not to, I would say. Basically, the woman who runs this, Anne Wills, she said, "I know that when my kids were growing up, every once in a while, I'd like to know what they were doing. And, that seems like the perfect time that you should go and hire a sniffer dog and send it around the house."
Definitely.
So, Miss Wills launched the service as a spin-off from her Dogs Finding Dogs service, which uses search dogs to find missing pets.
Oh, I thought that was going to be kind of a dog dating website.
That's what I thought as well, to start off with.
And dogs searching for dogs.
I mean, she doesn't say what the reward is for the search dog as it's looking for the other dog. So,
right.
I mean, they don't go into that, but that could be, you know, part of the deal.
Mm.
I don't know.
Any other animal stories?
Probably. Other drug stories. A man called the police to complain about some terrible marijuana he had just purchased. Although it turned out to be something that wasn't weed, but he's still arrested. So tough break for him. Mm. Don't phone them. Even if you are really annoyed that you think you've been skanked by a dealer,
You
know, just take the hit.
You've got to suck it up.
You've got to suck it
up.
No
other avenue.
Absolutely.
That's possibly an argument in favour of legalising drugs. Or decriminalising.
Yeah, well, George Soros this week said that drugs should be legalised in a bid to to basically say that, you know, we need the money, that's got to be done. He's American.
Is he a dinosaur?
George Soros is, I think he was named after his dad was a dinosaur, he isn't. He is like a kind of millionaire. I think he's done something bad. But anyway, He suggested that we should legalise marijuana, which I think, you know, in the big society is probably sensible.
I heard that some of the people behind Facebook, the people who run Facebook, are also kind of backing a decriminalisation campaign in California.
I've also heard that Taco Bell have come out in favour.
Really?
In a shock move to support.
It probably aligns quite well with their customer base, doesn't it?
Well, I think so, and they just, you know, probably complement each other quite nicely. You need a little bit of extra something if you're going to get through a Taco Bell, I'd say.
That's a good point.
Speaking of smoking, quickly, Nick Clegg appeared on Desert Island Discs this week. Did you listen to it?
I missed it.
You missed it. It's a shame. It was pretty cringeworthy. It wasn't the best thing I've heard.
So, what kind of songs did he go for?
He mixed sort of classical music. He mixed Shakira's World Cup anthem in there as well.
No.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my
apparently
God.
His son likes Waka Waka and likes to play it every morning.
I bet his son does,
he went for that. A bit of Johnny Cash as well.
Okay.
It was a mixed bag. You listen to it, you sort of feel kind of sorry for him a bit, I suppose.
Clegg took a bit of a battering in Charlie Brooker's column this week. Did you read that?
I didn't read it, but I'm not too surprised.
He said that Clegg had become kind of a universal disappointment sponge. whenever you look at Nick Clegg, you just go, You know, he kind of distracts attention away from the rest of the party because everyone's just so disappointed with all the kind of lost hope.
Yeah, exactly, and that's fair. The other thing that was sort of cringeworthy, he announced that he was a smoker, as he said, his special, you know, item that he'd like to take to the island would be cigarettes.
Did no one know about this before?
I didn't know about this. I'd never heard this before. But he said, I've never talked about this before. I hope my children don't find out. Which, of course, makes it a great platform to be mentioning.
Yeah. Children don't listen to Radio 4, so
that's true.
A fair, fair assessment.
He told Kirsty Young, it's the ultimate big society hobby. Pay more taxes and avoid living burdensomely long. So, you know, there you go.
Good point. Back on the drugs, a football team in Peru was this week accused of drugging their rivals. This was a match between Hijos de Acos Vinchos and Sport Ancash. Sport Ancash won the game 3-0, but more remarkably, four of the players from Hijos fainted during the second half. They were taken to hospital and they had blood tests which revealed that they had that their circulation contained traces of benzodiazepine, which is a tranquilizer used to treat insomnia. The coach of Hijos, Americo Ibanez, said they were going to launch a formal complaint. He said, my boys say Ancash staff gave them a liquid which made them feel dizzy and faint. When they returned the bottles, so the other team drank from them as well, someone snatched them out of their hands. So that doesn't sound good.
No.
Pele Malki, the president of Sport Ancash, had a different explanation. He said, they ate barbecue chicken with spices and ended up eating indigestion tablets afterwards. I'm sure that these four men fainted because of that and the physical effort they put in.
Sounds reasonable to me. Good excuse there.
Mm. Yeah, don't eat too much barbecue chicken before a match. I think that's
Definitely a good point. I mean, that sounds reasonable. The another story this week that I got from news.com.au, my new favourite website. Apparently, readers are appealing for the nation to stop using the chant "Aussie, Aussie, Aussie, oi, oi, oi," labelling it embarrassing and appalling. So they're calling on their readers to come up with a more appropriate replacement chant. So the call comes in after the Courier Mail reporter Rory Gibson argued for the chant to be banned in a piece published on their website. It said, Australia looks like a nation inhabited by ignorant boofheads after the chorus was sung in St. Peter's Square at the Vatican by a bunch of Mary MacKillop yobs. So there you go. I mean, it's not a great sort of, it doesn't really fit well with the kind of Vatican theme, I would say.
No, I mean, yes, Australians do look like a nation of ignorant boofheads. That's probably accurate. But I'd say, you know, England fans at sporting events hardly cover themselves in glory either. I'd quite like to ban some of our chants.
That's true. Mm. I mean, you have a big issue with people in large groups singing out of tune, don't you? Like, if you have a happy birthday chant and someone starts at the wrong tone, that really annoys you, doesn't it?
What annoys me is when people start singing at too high a pitch, so that when they get the high note later on, they have to go down a pitch spontaneously in the middle of the song. That's just wrong.
Wow.
It happens far too often. Everyone should just remember that when they start singing happy birthday, they should start at a lower pitch.
Good thinking. That's a good tip out there for all Papercuts listeners there. Mm. So that's the end of my sports news for this week.
Okay, I had it was quite a big week for sports. There was the whole Wayne Rooney saga last week. You know, it was adamant that he wanted to leave Manchester United, and who could blame him, having to kind of live on the paltry £90,000 a week wages that he was on for. You know, he's got a family to feed, he's got to put food on the table, and you know those kinds of wages were forcing him to sleep with some very ugly prostitutes.
That's true.
Hopefully, the new deal, about £180,000 a week, will allow him to get the prostitutes that he deserves. That's the proper caliber of.
I think that's what we're all hoping for.
Mm. Other sport news. Snooker is going to undergo a bit of a makeover. It's going to be replaced by Power Snooker. Have you heard about this?
No.
So this is a bit like 2020 cricket. Okay. You're a cricket fan.
Do
you like the 2020 reincarnation of cricket?
Well, it's different, isn't it? I mean, it's okay. I think I prefer normal cricket.
Yeah.
Test match cricket. I'm sort of an old school person that way.
The Power Snooker is going to be launched at the O2 Arena this week. It's going to involve loud music, crowd interaction, and games lasting half an hour each. And 20 seconds will be allowed for each shot. Double points scored for a two-minute period if the Powerball Red is sunk.
I've played games with you that have lasted about 3 hours, so if there's like crowd interaction and participation, how the hell are they going to get it done in 30 minutes?
I don't understand how this sounds basically like Big Break.
Yeah, well, Big Break was popular, more popular than snooker, but yeah, more people watching Big Break.
Mm. This comes from Rod Gunner, who's the impresario behind Michael Flatley's Lord of the Dance.
Oh, awesome. Well, I mean, I can't see what could possibly go wrong. A mixture of snooker, cricket and
Lord
of the Dance. I mean, that sounds like the greatest event
ever. I wonder what the outfits are going to be like, whether they're kind of wearing sequins and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, the waistcoats, I mean, no one, that is the sort of, it's the butler look. It doesn't go down very well, you know. No one wants to go and watch sort of live butlering, do they? That has been a very unpopular sport, so.
No. Other sport news, the world's first siesta championship was won by 62-year-old unemployed security worker Pedro Soria Lopez, the wildcard entry in the competition. He slept for 17 minutes in a noisy shopping centre in Madrid, and his snoring registered 70 decibels. That's equivalent of the noise of someone talking loudly. He said, "Oh, I'm so happy to be first champion," and he collected a €1,000 winning cheque. He said, "My wife made me do this, but they couldn't wake me up. Naturally, the lunch I had before with the €7 they'd given me helped." So the competition is aiming to promote the revival of a custom that some believe is in danger of vanishing because of modern life in Spain. "People are so stressed they can't take siestas anymore," said a spokesman. "Studies show it's a healthy practice and it recharges your batteries."
I agree, really. I mean, would you campaign for that? Would you go for that?
Very occasionally feel like I quite often feel like I need a nap, but when I do have a nap, I always find that I'm more tired afterwards than I was when I started.
Yeah.
So I don't
that's
know
if you're
not
used to it, you know, that's the sort of thing you ought to get used
maybe.
To.
Maybe. I mean, the Spanish, it seems to work very well for them.
Yeah, well, I think it's hard to sort of stop the relentless march of capitalism kind of going in the...
Capitalism is destroying the siesta.
Yeah, well, I think it is, because it's the same thing as we used to have. You won't remember this, but you know, you're only a youngster, but you know, shops didn't used to open on a Sunday.
It still annoys me that big shops have to close at 4:30 or 5 o'clock on a...
Yeah, but you don't work in a shop.
I know.
This should be.
But there are loads of unemployed people in Britain. Why can't they work in the shops?
Yeah,
keep them open for longer.
Certainly one argument. But I think you should, you know, you should draw a line somewhere and kind of realise that work isn't literally everything. You know, people can work themselves completely to death, which I realise is part of the big society. Speaking of which, on the back of George Osborne's swinging cuts. Do you know why it's swinging? I mean, no one ever does swinging anything other than cuts. Why
no, is it not I think it's one of those adjectives that only seems to apply to one thing.
What does it mean? I mean, what's...
Swinging.
Yeah. Why don't they just say swinging? I mean, swinging is just...
But so we can say swinging cuts.
Well, okay. So George Osborne's made some swinging cuts. They're expected to cause around 1 million job losses. Apparently, Osborne's strategy is that if people don't have jobs, there'll be an increase in enthusiasm for the big society. Osborne cites heroes such as Indiana Jones, professor of archaeology / antique recovery expert, and Sherlock Holmes, Europe's first ever police community support officer, as being role models for modern Britain. Increased joblessness will result in increased daytime TV watching. Osborne stated, if Dick Van Dyke and Angela Lansbury can solve murders in their spare time, why can't accountants do some light traffic warning on the weekends? So, I mean, all good points there, I think you'll agree.
Those are very good points. I hadn't been convinced up until now, but...
No.
Really won me over there.
Yeah, that's yeah.
Okay, I think it's now time for the return of an old popular feature.
Who throws a shoe? Honestly.
Right.
Classic feature shoe news there.
Yeah, so the feature was born, I think, after George Bush had a shoe thrown at him by the Iraqi journalist.
You can't remember what the journalist's name was, though.
It'll come to me.
Okay. Anyway, this is probably... George Bush was the one who was hit by the shoe.
Yeah.
Certainly.
Well, he wasn't hit by a shoe, was he?
Oh, he dodged the shoe.
And this is the key point. No one has been hit by a shoe. There have been many copycat attempts, but I haven't seen any examples where the leader has actually been hit by a shoe.
Well, have you got one now?
No, it's another failed attempt.
Another failed attempt.
I think, actually, I just remembered that I think we promised to stop covering the failed attempts because they were too numerous and people needed to do a bit more kind of... practice of throwing or to get closer to their target.
No, but before. Then we realised that we couldn't encourage people to throw shoes accurately at world leaders because that would be probably put us in some sort of hot water.
Okay, good point.
So let's revel in the failure of another shoe thrower. What happened this time?
Well, this time the target was John Howard.
Basically, someone, of course... famously threw a cathedral which hit Silvio Berlusconi in the face.
Was that thrown? I thought he just kind of held it and smashed
possibly.
It into his face.
Well, either way, that's the ultimate.
But that's much better.
It is. So after then, it sort of made all shoe-throwing attempts rendered useless. Yeah. But,
so, you know, kicking him in the face, you're probably less likely to miss.
That's true. That's the ultimate shoe-throw. It's hard to get that close.
Carry on. Anyway, this time the target was John Howard, the former Prime Minister of Australia, and he was on a live TV question time type programme, except it was... not like question time because it's just him, but somebody in the audience came forward, threw the shoes at him, and he said, "This is for the Iraqi dead." Both of the shoes way off.
Really?
Like, he didn't even flinch.
Didn't even get close.
John Howard was kind of smiling, and he just kind of carried. He wasn't fazed by the thing at all. And this is inadequate protest in my view.
That's true. Up your game, protesters.
But we're always getting behind novel forms of protest, and possibly a more successful attempt this week was in Holland, where members of the Dutch orchestra staged a musical protest at the Hague Central Station against government plans to slash their budget. So they kind of all, it was like a flash mob, they all convened in the station, sat down and played some music. And I wish I could play you a clip because they sounded pretty good. But there's a video available on the BBC News website which you can watch.
Yeah, brilliant. Will you tweet about that?
I'll tweet that from our Paper Cuts account.
Yeah, follow Paper Cuts Radio on Twitter for more exciting things like that. I briefly mentioned Silvio Berlusconi there. Got a bit of Berlusconi news this week.
He's never far from the news, is he?
He's not. He is good value for newspapers. There's no doubt about that. I mean, partially because he owns a lot of them in Italy.
That's true.
This one I don't think stemmed from him. Silvio Berlusconi gift to Blair sold for £98 on eBay by Cherie. apparently Blair was given a wristwatch as one of 9 gifts bought by the notoriously generous Mr. Berlusconi. I mean, not generous to his electorate, but to himself and his friends.
And to women he wants to sleep with.
Yes, of course. So, yeah, this was it was on eBay. She managed to get £98 for it. You know, that's not bad. But apparently she also was caught selling an autograph of Tony Blair for £10 on a book plate. Apparently, a spokesman for Mrs. Blair claimed she did not intend to profit from the autograph, saying she had advertised it to undermine the market in Blair signatures because she was upset that people were selling them for up to £35.
Wow.
Apparently, this was on the Daily Mail. This is actual news. This month, she bought 6 Mappin & Webb silver plate soup spoons for £17.50.
Was that on eBay as well?
Yeah, all on eBay. A 10-piece fish cutlery set for £34.99, 12 fruit knives for £44.99, a Magimix food processor for £219, and digital bathroom scales for £1.64. I mean, I would just hope that the intern who got that gig looking up Cherie Burr's purchase on eBay must be having a great time. But even better than this, Berlusconi news, Tony Blair begged wife to protect him from Berlusconi's bandana. As soon as I saw this headline, I had to read on. Tony Blair begged his wife Cherie to stand between him and Silvio Berlusconi to save him from embarrassment when the Italian Prime Minister met them during a summer holiday wearing a bandana. The notorious incident happened when the Blairs joined the Permatan politician in 2004 for a long weekend at his villa on the Italian island of Sardinia. Mr. Berlusconi was recovering from a hair transplant at the time and was photographed with the couple wearing a bandana to protect his newly created thatch. Mrs. Blair made the revelation during an appearance on an Italian TV talk show to promote her autobiography. Speaking on Che Tempo Che Fa, What the Weather Will Be Like, she told host Fabio Fazio, "That was a real surprise. When we arrived, we were a little surprised to see Silvio with that sort of scarf on his head. It was supposed to be a private visit, and he told us he'd had some problems with his head, but it was obvious to us that he'd had a hair transplant. He said, 'Let's go out.' And so he went on a boat, and whilst we were on board,
What's 'let's go out' in Italian?
I don't know. No. My Italian is weak. Let's go out. Before I meet the people, I have to change. And my husband hoped he would take the bandana off, but he didn't. And we went out with him simply putting another bandana on his head, which matched the colour of the shirt he was wearing. As we went out, Tony said to me, 'Whatever happens, make sure I am not photographed next to Silvio wearing a bandana. Make sure you are in the middle, otherwise the British press will kill us.' During the walkabout, the Blairs were photographed several times, and Cherie did manage to stay constantly between Berlusconi and her husband to save his blushes.
Did she ever have to sort of dive in dramatically at any moment?
Making that classic Cherie diving face. Yeah, so that's Berlusconi news for this week.
Okay, interesting to hear about Cherie Blair and her eBay addiction.
Yeah.
I've got another eBay-related story. A pensioner bought a former police van on eBay for £1,500 and used black tape to kind of dress it up so that it looked like a speed camera van and park it outside his house so that it would deter motorists from speeding. And apparently it was very effective.
Big society. In action.
Yeah, who needs police? You can just kind of just make your own mock speed camera.
Yeah, put flashing lights on your cars. Just, you know, why stop there? Do that stuff.
Well, I've never really used eBay. Are you a big eBay user?
I'm not a big eBay user. I sold some books, but then it ended up like costing me more to post them than I made out of selling them. So, I mean, I didn't have a great experience.
The other day we used Amazon Marketplace, which is a similar kind of deal. Got home on Friday night and bought a keyboard, which was pretty cool keyboard.
It's a great keyboard. Playing at 12:30 last night badly. I mean, this is probably going to annoy the neighbours, but you know, sometimes it has to be done.
Well, we can use it to come up with some new Paper Cuts jingles, I think.
That's true, definitely. I've got another interesting news story here. Radical school ban stops kids hanging out in groups larger than 3. A primary school principal has banned students from being in groups of more than 3 whilst at school in a radical plan to combat antisocial behaviour. This is not about bullying. It's about silly, annoying behaviour at the hands of a select few. We have had large groups of kids entertaining themselves at other kids' expense, so we thought if we just came up with stopping the groups, it would stop the problem. Mrs. Klein said the ban didn't extend to students participating in sporting games. She said the ban has received a mixed response with parents. I mean, what do you think about that?
Sounds a little harsh.
It does sound a bit harsh.
I mean, so what counts as a group of 3? Can you not have more than 3 people in a room? Or
I think it's like out and about when they're walking around. They can't like have 10 of them sort of in close proximity. They can have little huddles of 3.
Yeah,
but they can't get too close to each other.
How are they going to enforce that?
I imagine using some sort of corporal punishment.
Mm. Or big society-related...
yeah, definitely.
...enforcement scheme. Our teachers banned us from playing... we used to play poker in lunch breaks with gambling with coppers. So very small amounts of money got involved, but they put a stop to that. We had to resort to Monopoly money instead.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds pretty intense. I mean, it's a slippery slope, though, isn't it?
Mm. There's kind of bans coming in all over the place. There was an Italian town this week that banned miniskirts, apparently. They wanted to restore urban decorum and facilitate better civil coexistence. Offenders facing fines between €25 and €500.
So which country was this in?
This is in Italy.
Surely it's like he's banning miniskirts that are too short. Berlusconi must be wanting them the shorter the better.
This is a particular seaside town called Castellammare di Stabia.
Okay, so maybe not under his jurisdiction.
No, I think probably Berlusconi is going to be coming down there and saying, what the hell are you doing?
Sort yourselves out. I got an interesting story here. This is kind of big society as well. Shoplifting teen in Virginia made to dress up as Sesame Street character as punishment. A teenager was caught shoplifting and was made to dress as Bert from a notorious couple, Bert and Ernie, and carry a sign saying he was a shoplifter. Mr. Perry, the store owner, said he didn't want to press charges because a criminal record would have harmed the teen's future. The shoplifter, who said the punishment was an effective lesson, had to spend 6 hours over 2 days in costume with a sign in front of the store.
How old was the kid?
The kid was 18. So it's quite embarrassing.
That is quite embarrassing. Yeah, it would probably put him off.
Yeah, I would imagine so. One of my literally favourite stories possibly ever is... college student academically Rick Rolls with essay. Have you heard about this?
Nope.
This is fantastic. A guy called Maniac 182. Everyone in my computing class is certain the teacher doesn't actually go through any of the work we hand in, so I've been up for the last few hours crafting this. The first paragraph started as an idea to use ridiculously complex words to confuse him, do that for a bit, and then just go fresh prints on him, but that got boring. So what he did was he wrote the first word of every line in his essay.
Yeah.
Was done in such a way that it spelled out the whole of Rick Astley's classic song Never Gonna Give You Up. So yeah, it's actually amazing. You can watch the video online, which he kind of goes through the song in the background playing it. So it says, since the first concoction of a nexus of computational processing power in the late 1960s, never has the practicality of networks been brought into question due to advancements of ongoing assemblages exconjugating advantageous intimations for the ever-changing cycle headway to give you up, never going to let you down, following down the side. So if you, it's not necessarily really obvious, but if you look at the essay as a whole, then you can see it's not just like one verse, it's like the whole song.
That must have been a lot more work than just writing.
Apparently it took... 5 hours. It took 8 cups of coffee, but I finally did it. Rick rolling my computing teacher in style, and we'll definitely be tweeting that video because it's awesome. So, I mean, have you ever, you know, done anything?
I haven't. I had a teacher who's similarly. When I first started at a new school, my French teacher was leaving at the end of the first term to go to Singapore, and he didn't mark a single piece of work that whole term.
Really?
Yeah, I was, but I didn't come up with any innovative, kind of rebellious solutions like that. So
I can imagine.
Bravo.
Well done, well done. We could be a fan of that. My final favourite news story of the week, this is Anna Nova news story of the week. Aussie man has tongue record licked. His mates simply call him Tongue Boy, but Jay Sloot is also proud world record holder. His ludicrously wide tongue planting him in the newly released 2011 Guinness World Records book. The West Australian man's tongue has been measured at 7.9 centimetres wide and has the ability to lift entire 370ml cans of soft drink with it.
Wow.
It's pretty impressive, isn't it?
7.9 centimetres.
Yeah.
That's pretty big for
it. It's hard to really work, I think. But, I mean, the ability to
lift... Lifting.
How do you know how you would do that?
Mm.
How the hell do you do that?
Is there a video? There must be a video.
Yeah, we should check that out.
Otherwise, it's not true.
Okay. We'll look that up and then put it on the Paper Cuts Radio Twitter.
Okay. My last thing is a story. It's emerged this week from somebody's memoirs that Bill Clinton, I think he's a former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Chief of Staff, has claimed that Bill Clinton often lost the nuclear codes. They're carried around on a special plastic card, and the president's supposed to have them at all times, and they call it the biscuit. But apparently Clinton lost it for months, so theoretically he would have been unable to order a nuclear strike if he'd needed to.
This sounds like a great idea. They should all kind of swap keys or something like that, or have a kind of nuclear key party where everyone swaps them around.
So you mean all the different countries kind
of
throw them in together.
Somewhere out there we could, you know, theoretically set these off, but you know, everyone's got a fair equal chance of it not working. So the
throw the keys into a pot, and then no one can set them off without kind of consulting everyone first.
Yeah.
But if one country's being a dick, then all the other countries can say, yeah, let's nuke their ass.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is a great solution for world peace.
Do you want the responsibility for looking after the bowl or?
Not particularly. I mean, the bowl has to be guarded by all countries, you know.
The UN bowl.
At the same time, big UN bowl. Apparently Jimmy Carter once sent a suit to the dry cleaners with the card and the secret codes inside. So, you know, Bill Clinton is not the first.
Well, that similar thing happened to me, actually. I went and got my winter coat repaired recently. And
you left some nuclear codes inside?
I left some nuclear codes in there. It was a real gaffe. But luckily I've got some sympathetic to the West dry cleaners, so it's all fine. Basically, I had my pocket sewn up on my winter coat, which had got damaged, and they sewed them up. But they sewn a Tic Tac into the sleeve, so I've now got a Tic Tac that is sewn into my coat that I can't get out. So
you can kind of feel it through the fabric.
I can feel
it
through the fabric. It's definitely in there. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen to it, but if it rains, it's probably going to get a bit mushy and horrible. At the moment, it's staying pretty firm. You can definitely tell it's a Tic Tac. So, I mean, that's the big life conundrum. It's not in the same scale as the nuclear thing, but
no.
To me, it feels pretty much...
Frankly, it seems slightly ridiculous that the security of the free world should have to rely on one man being able to remember to carry something around with him.
That's true.
And
it's definitely much better to just have the threat and not actually be able to do it, such as, you know, just painting some trident as being a big, giant conspiracy.
Yeah.
That would be what it should be about. Spend the money on something else and just
spend the money on the illusion of having
paint some giant warheads and they put something on Google Maps in a field in Swindon and then sort of just let kind of the media do its work.
Can't they have like iris scanning or any of that kind of stuff? Can't they use that to confirm that he's the president rather than him carrying some codes?
Yeah, but what if Ahmadinejad chopped out his eyeball and held it up to the screen?
Well, that's a lot harder to do than nicking some cards out of his pocket.
Good point. Well, speaking of the UN bowl of keys, it's important when you enter into a relationship that you make sure you come out of it in the right way. You've got to have the right incentives in order to not break up and that sort of thing. And you've got to protect yourself in that case. And so prenuptial agreements have now been agreed that they apply in England and Wales, which didn't happen before. The law now falls in line with the United States and much of Europe. So, I mean, imagine you strike me as the type of man who would definitely have a prenuptial agreement. You know, would you? If you were rich, I mean, if you stopped spending all your money on keyboards, then, you know, you could be rich. You know, your wife might be
I could definitely go for having a rich wife, I think.
Yeah, I mean,
I'd be up for that.
But I suspect she would see that glint in your eye that just emerged then and would think, well, I'm going to have a prenuptial agreement if I've got some money. I don't want Wong getting his hands on my Wonga. But now this counts. So you could. I think it's a sensible idea. It's not a great time at the start of your marriage to be basically discussing the end of your marriage.
No.
But, you know, it's a practical time.
It would spoil the ceremony somewhat.
Yeah, exactly. But it's a practical age we live in, so, you know, it's fair enough. But my favourite part of this would be, this was in the BBC magazine, not all premarital agreements are between the would-be bride and groom. Gemma Carter and her partner Adrian from Liverpool had to sign an agreement with her father Barry. It stated that if they split up within 10 years of getting married, they would pay him back the cost of the wedding, £23,000. He came up with the idea because he thought it was too young to get married at 23. My uncle is a solicitor and drew up the document and we all signed it. So there you go. We've been married for 5 years now. Me and my husband always joke that we've only got another 5 to go and then we're free.
That sounds like a good... it's like a guarantee.
Yeah.
Some kind of warranty. And it's probably quite sensible because it makes the person think about, you know, by choosing to get married, they are burdening the other person's family. And they've got to kind of take that into account before they leap to any decisions.
Well, if you, want any prenuptial advice, then feel free to get in contact with us. We can probably advise you. Not officially lawyers, but certainly have covered a lot of legal issues across the Papercuts range.
Yeah, I mean, not just law, but we're happy to give advice on all kind of...
Is there any? Can you think of any titles for a section that could be Papercuts advice?
Ask Tom or Sam.
Ask Tom or Sam. This is a classic feature that's starting out. Ask Tom or Sam. You've got to work on the jingle.
I'll work on the jingle, yeah.
And so if you've got any questions for us or anything you want us to investigate, just get on there, get on to at Papercuts Radio, send us a message or at Tom Hoffman, Tom with an H because I'm an idiot, and Sam11 because there's another one. So, give us a shout before next week.
What about people who aren't on Twitter?
Well, do we really care about that?
I don't want to talk to them.
I'm only joking. If you are on Twitter, then what can you do? Is it possible?
What happened to that email address?
We did have an email address, but I haven't got it. Do you want to give out your email address?
No.
Okay, we'll work on setting up an email address again. I think papercuts2009@hotmail.co.uk.
Or send it to IC Radio, and they will pass it on.
Yeah, send us IC Radio. And we'll be back next week.
Yes, we will.
We're not going on holiday or anything, are we?
I'm not.
Okay.
Are you?
Well, I don't know. I'm going to learn the keyboard. That's what I'm going to do.
Good.
Maybe we'll bring it in next week. Have a
I
live.
Think we should. The keyboard and maybe the ukulele, the harmonica.
Oh, guys.
Our flat is a kind of a haven of musical
If someone in the house has some talent, creation. It'll be an awesome house.
It would, yeah. That's all we're missing.
Can we get any of that on eBay?
Talent.
Yeah.
There must be people selling musical talent on eBay.
Yeah, all right. Well, we'll look into that. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week. Have a good one.
See ya.